It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley is here. Paul's got Windows 10X running. We'll talk about what 10X is all about, what it means, what it's for. We also have some industry news, another departure from Microsoft. And then Paul reveals all about his future book plans. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 708, recorded Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. Ninja Ant in Candyland. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Conga at conga.com/twit. Experience Conga's new brand and have some fun by testing your trivia knowledge. They'll be donating to a charity that supports COVID relief efforts. Go to conga.com/twit today. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. And here... That's the best I could do.
It was like in Dolby Atmos.
News from Microsoft. It was spatial audio. It's very spatial. There he is. That's Paul Thurrott. Thurrott.com. Leanpub.com for his book. He joins us every week, of course, as he has for many a moon. Is that your roofing in the background?
Yeah, my dog is joining us this week for some reason. I think the UPS person has arrived.
Saw the cutest picture of Mary Jo Foley's Sriracha. On Instagram, peering out from the paper. It was so cute.
He loves
so
paper.
Cute. Yeah. Why is it? Cats seem to love cardboard, too. I don't understand that. Yeah. It must smell good to them. I don't know.
Boxes and paper.
Yeah. Yep.
They like enclosed spaces. They like to burrow into things. Yeah.
That's Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com is the quick way to get to her ZDNet blog. We are gathered together to discuss Microsoft. I am getting more and more excited about Windows 10X. What do we know? What do we know? There's some leaks.
What do we know?
There's some leaks.
Yeah. Yeah, we know a lot. We knew some academic kinds of things before, but as of the past week, we know a lot more because it leaked.
The whole thing leaked?
Paul installed it. Yeah.
Oh,
you installed it, right? Did you install it in a VM or did you install it natively?
I think a VM is the only way you can install it. But I had Raphael build me a better version of it so that I could get widescreen resolutions and stuff like that.
Nice.
So,
or I didn't have it. I mean, he did that and I used it.
The Verge said their conclusion was this is Microsoft's response to Chrome OS.
Is that right? Which we've known all along, pretty much.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we already knew what it looked like. We had seen screen captures before of what the main start menu looked like. And it looks like a bunch of static icons with your documents listed underneath and a search bar at the top. Very not like traditional Windows 10, but very simplified. Kind of like the launcher, right?
Very similar to the Chrome OS. UI. I think that's the big.
It does.
When people are when you, it's simple to say this is the Chrome OS answer or whatever from Microsoft. It is. It is literally a carbon copy in many ways from a UX perspective of Chrome OS.
Interesting, replacing Chrome with Edge.
Yeah. And there's other limitations too, but we can get to that.
So I'm just curious because one of the things I was hoping is that maybe 10X would be kind of a under the hood fix, but it doesn't sound like it's that at all.
It's hard to say. Sorry, but I mean, it is kind of right. It's clearly much smaller and lighter and faster than normal Windows 10, which I think is the point, especially for the education.
What did they take out? Why is that?
They took out Win32.
That's
obviously
good.
There are, which is a. We should just address this once and never just forget about it forever because it doesn't really matter. But obviously, the thing that we think of as Win32 has to exist to some degree for this thing to boot up and run and do what it does. It's Windows.
Right.
Windows is Win32. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've talked a lot about the componentization efforts over the years, et cetera, et cetera. So this is the latest evolution of that kind of Core OS principle where it's a minimal version of Windows, much like Chrome OS is a minimal version of Linux. With the web browser and with store app and pure store app compatibility, like UWP type store app compatibility.
Is the biggest improvement, I wonder, that they're eliminating legacy code?
Yeah.
Not just Win32, but just kind
also
of
the biggest
whole
problem when you think about it.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the millstone around Windows' neck.
That's right.
Yeah.
Is this...
Paul... Does it say Windows Core OS anywhere, like that you saw in the code? Because that was originally when we heard about Windows 10X, which when it was codenamed Santorini and Windows Lite, the big thing we thought about was it was built on WCOS, Windows Core OS, right? And instead of built on a traditional Windows
foundation.
I mean, it
clearly is. Right. But no, that language doesn't appear in the UI. But why would
it? It's not
right?
there. I mean, Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I feel like we knew a lot about this. Like I said, we had seen screen captures. We knew it was meant to be a Chrome OS competitor, even though Microsoft has never said that publicly and will probably never say it officially.
It's hard to avoid at this point. I mean, it's so obvious.
I know. They never wanted to say at Microsoft that they have a Chrome compete initiative or strategy, but obviously they need to have one, and they do. I mean, the very first core audience for 10X is supposed to be the education market and first-line workers, which is pretty much the core market for Chrome OS, right? So
yeah. It's literally customers who can exist mostly on the web.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
There are weird limitations to this thing, which I'm still confused by. It only runs apps full screen, you know.
But
I think a lot of the we have to guess at a lot of the rationales for different decisions. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I have to think, you know, because people, of course, a lot of people who read our sites, you know, are enthusiasts, and they look at this and they think, well, it's some interesting stuff, but this isn't for me, and it isn't for you. That's true. So why would Microsoft make this? The theory has to be that they were asked to make this, right, essentially. You know, that some education customers must have said, look, this Chrome OS thing works. Not really sure about Google. Can you do something like this? You know? Mm-hmm. I didn't think they meant literally. So, you know, Microsoft took it rather literally, which is a little surprising, you know.
You feel like this is something they've been trying to address forever, right? Like WinRT was the first attempt. Then Windows 10S or 10 Windows 10 and S mode. And none of these things ever worked, right? Because they couldn't run Win32 apps.
Well, actually, they could have. They just didn't allow it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, WinRT would have done it very poorly, slowly.
Yeah.
And that's a problem we're addressing today again in Windows 10 on ARM, right? So there's that kind of thing. But, you know, there's a fundamental difference between those earlier approaches and Windows 10X. And it's an important thing to kind of understand. Like, if you think about Windows 10S as originally released, whenever that was, 4 years ago, I think, in May, at the education event, right? They announced it.
Right.
Really what that was Windows 10 Home or Pro, it doesn't matter, but, you know, a mainstream version of Windows 10. Where essentially some policy had been applied internally that prevented the user from downloading and then from installing a web downloaded Win32 app. System was perfectly capable of doing it, but they prevented that from happening. In Win10X, you can download it, of course, but you can't install it at all. It won't install. It's not because there's a policy in place. It literally can't work. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge difference because Win10S was an attempt to take this big thing called Windows and make it simpler and we'll say better, right? Faster, more secure, however you want to put it. More reliable, maybe. Better battery life, whatever the excuses were. But it was still, ultimately, it was all full-blown Win32 under the covers. It was the whole system was there. This one, they literally did the hard work of stripping stuff away. And, you know, for every person listening, it's like the conversation we have about Windows 10 and ARM when you can't run all the apps. Like, everyone will have this thing where they're like, well, but I need that. You know, it could be something simple like Notepad, which Mary Jo uses, or Paint or WordPad. It could be something like Windows Subsystem for Linux or, you know, Photoshop or, you know, Office, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I have some issues with it, of course, and I have lots of questions, but I give them a little credit for doing that hard work. This is the step Microsoft almost never takes, right? It's a very hard line view of a modern mobile platform that looks a little bit like Windows and is maybe called Windows, but is literally not Windows. Mm-hmm. You know, and we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, we should point out, I was going back in the history to see what Microsoft actually has and hasn't said publicly about 10X. They've said very little, right?
Yes.
I mean, the first time they talked about 10X was when we saw the Duo and the Neo at that October 2019 event. And they said, by the way, the Neo, which was the dual screen Windows device, is going to run this thing called Windows 10X. And they didn't share a lot at that time about what that was. Right. And then May after that, they had to acknowledge that even though they told us in October that 10X had been had designed from the get-go for dual screen devices, which we knew was not true, but that was their line.
Which is a lie.
That actually it was going to debut on single screen devices. And they attributed that to the pandemic because they said, we don't think it's the right time to introduce something more, quote, frivolous. I don't know if they use the word frivolous, but, you know, probably not. But
sure.
That was my word. But, you know, they decided instead that it was going to debut on single screen devices. And at that time in May, they also talked about it's going to have containers to run your apps. And they talked about there would be UWP container, an MSIX container, and a Win32 container. After that, they've said nothing. We have heard that Win32 isn't going to be part of the original debut of 10X. But Microsoft has never said that publicly.
One little thing maybe I could insert into that timeline is sometime between the Neo announce in October, I think it was, of 2019.
Yeah, right? It was. Yep.
And that May date that you're talking about where they said, yeah, we're not
going to acknowledge single screen. Yep.
They released some developer VMs, remember, this system.
Yep.
And so we did get an early peek at that stuff. And and there were, you know, there were lots of problems for sure. And at that time, I mocked up a picture of what that would look like on a single screen device. And I said, you know, this is what it's supposed to look like. And, you know, and here we are again, you know. The other thing is, you know, it's funny. I went back and looked at what I had written about this stuff. And I found something from 2 years ago where Microsoft had announced the previous December that they were going to bring out a new Chromium-based version of Edge. And I said, well, maybe this is the time to start thinking about this thing I think of as an Edge book, right? Where it's basically Chrome OS, but running a minimal, and I think I called it at the time Windows Core OS, light version of Windows with Microsoft Edge. Because I really do believe that there is a call for this, even though, again, people listening to this, people read our stuff are probably like, well, I don't want anything like that. That's silly. And why would they call this thing Windows? And on it goes. But the education market is pretty important. It's pretty big. And you could even take some of the stuff that Terry Morrison had said about Windows 10S 4 years ago, where he kind of said, look, yeah, it's going to be on these low-end devices, but we also think it should be on really nice hardware. And we think there are executive types who fly around and go to meetings and stuff, and they're going to want this stripped-down system. And I see Windows 10X evolving in that direction as well.
Yeah. I think over time, 10X will inform regular Windows more and more. But I think, at least for the foreseeable future, Windows 10, as it exists today, continues going forward, right? And 10X goes forward on its own path, right? I've seen some people saying, so 10X becomes Windows 10. No, that's not anytime immediately anyway, right?
Right. Yeah,
and the reason is... Well, the reason is enterprises, for one, they need full-featured Windows 10 enterprise. They don't want 10X in the enterprise.
There are some parallels. Unfortunately, I've done this a couple of times now with where I draw a parallel to something new that never takes off, to Windows NT, which eventually did. But, you know, Windows NT and DOS-based Windows kind of coexisted for a long time. Now, one of the strategies there that's very different from what's happening today is that those two things shared a common user interface, right? From the beginning. And that's not, you know, obviously here we're making the split here. But there is the same case to be made. If Microsoft can get the Win32 container support to work, and not just work, but work well, meaning good performance, good compatibility, this could spell the end of Windows eventually. Right now, Windows NT didn't take over for Windows for, I think it was 7 years, right? 1993 to 2000, when Windows 2000, well, actually 8 years because it was Windows XP. when that transition really happened. So it could be a while. It could never happen, right? Windows X and Windows 10X may never take off. It may never, that Win32 may never work. Maybe they'll always need to maintain these two systems. And maybe Windows 10X just fades away like Windows RT did, like S mode did. You know, we don't know, obviously. But I you know, for all the questions, for all the weird things, the more you use it, the weirder it is when things are missing. Like you're so used to doing things like right clicking on something and getting options, or, you know, being able to copy things to the desktop, or being able to run things in windowed mode, right? Which is like such a basic feature. It's weird. Like using this thing is weird, but I suspect that this V1 thing, the way that they did this was they cut deep to get it to come out in a reasonable amount of time and limited the audience to education, where, by the way, those computers have tiny, stupid little screens, terrible internals, very small system resources. Everything that they announced this week, because there were a bunch of education, which we'll get to, but a lot of new education PCs, whatever existing education PCs, they would be a good match for this kind of thing, I think, assuming, you know, that you could actually use the system to get work done in school. Right. But as far as like running better on that hardware, this is a huge problem for Windows when those computers sell for $185 to $350. Yeah. Chromebooks, Chrome OS, whatever you think of it, runs well on that hardware. Mm-hmm. Windows 10, not so much.
Yeah.
How about Surface Go? You know, if Windows 10X made sense today, that could breathe new life into a device like Surface Go, which I think is too underpowered for Windows for the most part, except for the highest end configuration. Suddenly that system could make a little bit of sense.
Right. And we should say this again, because I get this question all the time, that what we keep hearing about 10X is it's not going to be available on existing hardware, right? When Microsoft makes it available, it's going to debut first on OEM-made PCs, like just very low-key kind of rollout on a couple PCs. We don't know what they are, but they're going to be new. They're going to be Intel-based. And then later, it's going to be available on more PCs, but it'll never be an operating system that Microsoft says, here's 10X, go put it on the existing Surface Go or Windows Pro 7. Yeah. It's going to be meant for future, still as of now, unannounced hardware. And one day ARM, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this thing to me would make tons of sense on ARM, honestly. But, you know, we'll get there. Yeah. But, I know, and again, a lot of what anyone's going to hear about 10X, who's an enthusiast or someone who listens to this kind of show, is going to, there's all these roadblocks, you know, everything we say, it's like, well, hold on a second. Why wouldn't they, you know?
Yeah.
You got to understand, this thing is entering a world, this isn't 1993, right? It's not 1995. This is 2021 or whatever, and mobile platforms are it. And you know, you don't go to a store online or in person and buy iOS. You don't, you know, this is not how that happens. And so they're trying to make it like that kind of a thing. It's a closed box solution. Yes, there might be a small market for people who are like, yeah, but I'd really like to put it on Surface Go or whatever. yeah, and maybe you'll be able to, but it will probably be a new Surface Go, not the one you have now.
Although, enthusiasts like Raph and others, they will put it on old hardware, right? I saw a guy today saying he put it on a Lumia phone. So never say die to a Windows phone, guys. You know? So, I mean, it can be done. We're not saying it's impossible to put it on old hardware, but I'm just saying Microsoft won't be supporting it on old hardware, right?
There's so much I need to know about the system that is not possible to know right now, right?
Right.
You can't run a command line on this thing. You can't browse the file system beyond the one the download folder. You can't. There's all this stuff we're used to. There's no run command. Those icons you see in that little grid, there's 15 of them maybe. That's every app on the thing. There is no special extra app somewhere hiding. This is it.
You didn't mention the biggest thing, obviously. Notepad isn't available.
Notepad is not
for
there,
it.
Yeah.
This is a deal breaker right here.
Yeah. Could you install Notepad?
No.
Can you install your Notepad, Paul?
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Suspect that my UWP, my pure UWP version would probably work.
Okay.
By the way, that's the one that's the least like Notepad, right? So
I mean, sorry.
There are notepad type products in the store that work. By the way, there are a ton that don't too. That's the big problem. Yep. It's kind of surprising how much doesn't work that's in the store, even though they show up. Mm-hmm. Like the way the store is supposed to work is it's supposed to not show you stuff that doesn't work. But in Windows 10X, it shows you everything. It just says this isn't going to work on your device. So that's kind of alarming. Here's a big question. Sorry, this is related to this. I just think about this for a second.
Okay.
There's no Win32 in this, supposedly, right? Well, Microsoft Edge runs fine. Edge is a Win32.
I was just going to bring that up. That's exactly what I was just going to bring up. So, you know what? So Microsoft's never said this, right? But my contact said there was the reason that Credge full is, which is a Win32 app, runs on 10X is they built a special shim so that it would run. So that makes me think there's a way to get Win32 apps on there if Microsoft doesn't stop them from being.
There's a to do the Credge shimmy. That's all.
The Credge shimmy.
Exactly.
All the kids are doing it.
All the kids.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the system requirements of a product like Edge, it's got to be a pretty big list of stuff it needs. So it has to be a superset of what like Notepad would need. It has to be. I am kind of confused by this, but so I don't, you know, there's no, Microsoft's not talking. There's no way to know.
In fact, I'm looking back at my original story where I was putting up slides that I got from sources that Microsoft didn't give me. And there's a picture of one that shows within the UWP app space, there's a little mini like Win32. And so if an app needed to call Win32, it could. And if it didn't, it didn't need to load Win32, and that's what kept the performance good with 10X. So there's a way, right? There is a way.
This is kind of hard to explain, but in traditional versions of Windows, mainstream versions of Windows, we have these kind of common dialogues and interfaces, right? So file open, file save, save as. These are common.
Yep.
You can, in Windows today, you can. From a UWP app, you can launch those experiences, right? When it first started, you got kind of a UWP file browser thing that was very limited. Now you can actually get the full-blown file open, file save, save as. Mm-hmm. In Windows 10X, the file open, save, save as does not exist. So the only thing that you get, no matter which app you're using, is that UWP kind of dumbed down thing, which can only browse one drive and one folder on your local computer, which is downloads. Mm. That's true in Edge. It's true. It's true in anything. I mean, so Edge is a Win32 app. So even though on Windows today, if you were to, you know, do a file, you know, right click on a dot area, an image or something, save as, you would get a traditional Win32 style dialog. If you do it in Win10X. Mm. You get a UWP interface. So, I mean, they can short circuit stuff like that, I guess. I mean, you know, Notepad could use that. I don't see why.
That's right.
It seems to me like Notepad would be kind of a no-brainer because it's such a basic utility.
I know.
I can't explain. I don't know. We'll see. And by the way, who knows? Yeah. You know, maybe when this thing comes out, there's a smaller list of actual Win32 utilities that do ship with it. This thing we have is not necessarily...
the real and
literally
end
what we're
going
to get. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a near final. We think it's a near final build, but we don't think it's the final build. Right. So two things on Win32 I wanted to add. So when I saw a timetable last fall of when Microsoft was intending to roll all this stuff out, it showed 10X as a spring 2021 deliverable, but it also showed this thing I keep talking about, cloud PC, the virtualization service, as a spring 2021 deliverable. So that could be the way Microsoft makes this more palatable, right? They say, hey, if you really need a Win32 app and you want to run the first iteration of 10X, you could run it through cloud PC if you put cloud PC on here.
Yeah, that would totally make sense.
Right. But then I don't know if you saw, when the leak came out, I started doing a search on the career site at Microsoft for 10X, and I found a new job posting that calls the team building 10X the cloud-powered Windows devices team, CWD. So if they market this as a cloud powered version of Windows. This could explain a lot of things, right? It could explain why everything defaults to UWP-like things with OneDrive. And, you know, you're not going to be able to sign in with your regular Microsoft account. You'll have to be connected to the web. So there'll be a lot of things that they may just build that won't work locally and will have to work with the web. Right.
Yeah.
Or that could be a reference also to Cloud PC. I don't know. But
yeah. Well, remember that the original code name for Windows 10 S mode was Windows 10 Cloud. Right.
Right.
And that was the conversation I had with Terry Morrison at CES. I guess it was 4 years ago. I said that name is terrible and that needs to change. And he said, yeah, everyone agrees, you know, and they didn't know what the name was at the time. But
yeah.
Windows 10 Cloud would make a little more sense for this product, I guess.
It would.
A lot of people don't think it should be called Windows. But remember, if the plan is what we've described here, where education is the first release, there's no Win32 container. But the plan is always to get Win32 into it somehow, right, through the container or through your Cloud PC or Cloud PC product. Then, it's running Windows apps. We can call it Windows. It's okay. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't worry too much about the name.
I don't like the name Windows for this, I have to say, not just okay. because of the 132 thing. I think a better name for this would have been Edge OS. It really would have been.
Oh, but interesting. Then, yeah, like Chrome
OS. But then everybody would say, oh, it's just like Chrome OS, and that's what Microsoft doesn't want them to say.
Right. Right? Oh, it's not just like Chrome OS. It's not as good. See, that's the problem. So Chrome OS, remember, can run Windows apps. That's one thing.
Right.
Chrome OS can run Android apps. Chrome OS can run Linux apps. You know.
Maybe one day 10X will run Android apps if their Project Latte thing comes to pass.
That's right. Yeah, and that's one thing to think about. I mean, maybe was that always the point, right, when we heard about this the first time? Where they, you know, it would probably work on any version of Windows. But when you think about a device that might ship on a really small, thin, light little laptop-y or tablet-y thing, running Android apps on that makes tons of sense.
You know, it does.
That could solve some problems, too. Here's a thought from our chat room. Cytech says Windows 10X just going to be the thin client for Windows Virtual Desktop.
Cloud PC.
Right. The reason we're not seeing anything here is because they don't want anything there.
They don't want it to run.
I know. But then that comes back to schools, right? And so schools want stuff to be super manageable, super cheap, super easy. Yep. And having to get schools to subscribe to a virtualization service probably wouldn't be cheap, right?
Yes, right.
Unless they do a special deal for schools, you know, like Office 365 for education was free, right? Like they made the licenses free.
Project Get Them While They're Young. Is that the idea?
Exactly.
We'll basically give this away to education because we want these people to get hooked on this thing.
Yep.
Yes. Money is always the problem here when you talk about education and also the lack of sophisticated infrastructure, which is why it kind of has to come from the cloud. I will say, and you remember this event, you know, I keep talking about this Surface Laptop 10S event, education event. Mm-hmm. One of the goofier moments of that, you can go back and watch it, I'm sure it's on the web somewhere, is Terry Morrison walking around with the USB key and talking about how, you know, the idea is like we could reset these computers using a USB key and it's, you know, so easy, even like a teacher can do it. I don't mean that in a disparaging way.
They're non-technical.
Yeah. Right. I know they're not IT staff, right? But that's the goal for education. Like you're in a K-12 situation, perhaps. You don't have dedicated IT staff, but you have a lab of computers and students come and go all day long. You know, Windows PC reset works wonderful, but it takes a little while and it's certainly not going to happen between classes. Like one of the neat things about Chrome OS is you can wipe the thing very fast. And that is something that's built into this, by the way. So if you go to the interface that in Windows 10 goes to PC reset, you get like this one button. There's no options. You don't get to decide anything. But if you say yes, it resets the whole thing and comes back. And it does it very quickly.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah. Mm. Power wash.
So exactly. So power wash for PC sort of. Or for 10X anyway. I feel like Terry Morrison at that point was just doing what they could do then, that maybe this was a little bit more of the long-term vision that they were going to develop some platform or have some platform that was as thin and light and resource-friendly as Chrome OS and had the same management and resetting capabilities, right, or niceties or simplicities or whatever you want to call them. Because, you know, Chrome OS, there's a reason it's popular, and a lot of it has to do with simplicity.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think we won't see this until later in the spring. I don't know if it'll be timed with an event, you know, like if they'll time it with something like
I would have thought this week would have been the time, right? So we.
I know. I saw you say that.
Well, this week used to be Bet. And now what they call it?
Bet Fest.
What do they call it?
Bet Fest. So,
no.
Bet Fest.
Oh, that begs to be messed with.
I know. I know. Okay. So that's the big education conference in England, right? That every year.
But every year, there's a bunch of new
cheap PCs roll out. Yeah. But you know why 10X didn't debut on it? It's not done. Like, we're at the near final build, right? So OEMs want it like months ahead to put it on new hardware.
Of course they do. But I feel like if you look at any of those PCs that were announced, maybe they're not going to say so today, but maybe when it's June or something, HP or Dell or whoever these companies are will give educational institutions the option of getting Windows 10 Home or Windows 10 Education probably or Windows 10X. You know?
No.
Maybe. No? Okay.
No. What I think is going to happen, I think it's going to come out really kind of low key. And I think it's the reason it's going to be low key and on just like a couple new devices, maybe a clamshell laptop and a 2-in-1 or something, is because they know it can't run Win32. And so they don't want to make a huge deal out of it.
I bet a lot of educational software wants Win32, doesn't it?
I bet it does too.
That's the thing. That's a good point.
And also, if you talk about delivering Windows apps from the cloud, as a service, something that people are going to, or companies or schools or whatever, are going to have to pay for. Mm-hmm. This seems to me more like something that could happen in college level than so much K through 12, unless it's a particularly wealthy school. I mean, I'm still a little bit up in the air about that kind of thing.
Yeah, true. That's a good point.
But if you can, by the way, if you can buy a Chromebook as a school and say, we do our stuff in the web, I mean, why couldn't you use one of these? Wouldn't it work just as well for that?
Yeah. In theory, at least, right?
Right. I mean, and I know if you can these do it are that subtle way. Distinctions, but I mean, you don't have Google Google probably will tell you they're not tracking students. I'm sure that's one of the value propositions of Chrome education. But I there has to be a healthy distrust of Google, I would imagine, in education.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
my hopes have been shattered, but
you guys are happy. By the way, some of it's great. I mean, the replacement for the Action Center stuff, which by the way looks exactly like Chrome OS, but the little UI you get up when you get up when you click in the right corner there, which is like a bunch of quick settings and quick status type things, and then notifications on top of it. Again, identical to Chrome OS, is nice. It's nice.
Yeah,
we have talked a little bit about this notion of like a dashboard, like on Office.com or the Office app on Windows. Mm-hmm. The start experience is very much like that. It's nice. Not a lot to search for there. There's a search box. You can search to your heart's content. You're not going to get a lot there, but other than like web results. But having that kind of a like access to recent documents and the application part of it seems to be broken. It's a weird collection of apps that is in no particular order. You can expand and contract it, but it remains contracted every time you open it. And the apps you install are in the part you can't see. It's just not complete. And I'm sure that's all going to be fixed. But I mean, that's, you know, it's simple. It's like there's no such thing as intuitive anymore with computers. But we've all used enough devices. I think even a child could turn this thing on and be like, yeah, I get it. You know, it has that feel to it, which I think is a positive, you know.
And I think it's really good they're mimicking this UI experience, like with the launcher on Android, right? And in Office.com, like it's starting to look familiar to people who use Windows, right?
That's right. And that speaks to the whole, you know, when everyone was like, why did you go with Android? Blah, blah, blah. And like their whole thing is like, look, we're working on a user experience that the hardware shouldn't matter. You know, if you could, not that I think the Duo is a particularly compelling device, but if you get this thing and you have the Office app and you've got, you know, Teams and whatever, Microsoft Outlook. You're in the Microsoft user experience, right? It doesn't matter that it's running Android. I mean, not really.
No. No. It doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
Except for those gestures. I hate the Android gestures. I hate them.
It's kind of funny because mobile has taken such... has become the dominant platform.
It has. Yeah.
And so, ultimately, desktop is going to follow mobile rather than vice versa.
I know. I think. That's a really good point. Right. Before, if you were on a PC, it was so different from what your phone experience was, but now they're trying to make it the same. Yeah, that's true.
I'll tell you, I mean, one of my early starts with this stuff, when I started writing, I was working part-time at a community college, and I didn't, in a lab, as the students would raise their hand, you walk over and they say, they're using some program I'm not familiar with, like Microsoft Excel. You know, it's like, hey, I'm trying to do this. You know, and I'd be like, did you right click it? I'm like, oh, there it is.
Yeah, there it is.
And like right clicking had just become a thing. It was just before Windows 95 came out, like Office 4 or 6 or whatever it was. And this is the answer to everything. You right clicked everything. Like it always worked. It was always right. It made me look like a genius. It was beautiful. And now but that skill is gone in this system. Like you can almost not right click anything.
Yeah.
When I right click the taskbar in Windows 10, I can see 15 options, some of which trigger submenus. When you right click the taskbar in 10X, nothing happens. There's not even, you don't even get to taskbar settings from it. Like, there's nothing there.
And that's proof of what I was just saying. Because there's no right click in mobile.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
Right.
That's exactly.
It really does have that mobile vibe.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I honestly, despite the fact that I have particular needs like everyone else, I mean, I kind of like it. You know, I wouldn't mind experiencing this on a, you know, laptop or something just to really use it on hardware.
Mm. I think it would be perfect for me, except for the notepad problem. But other than that, like, I think it would really be good.
It's a solvable problem. I mean, there are.
It is. I know. So many people were like, you need to run Visual Studio Code because it's just like Notepad. I'm like, it's not.
Yeah, Visual Studio Code also.
Really? People say that to you? That's hysterical.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, they're like, you can use it as a text editor. I'm like, so the reason I use Notepad is because it doesn't have any features. Like, that's what I want.
You don't want a Rust plugin for your text editor? I don't understand.
I use Visual Studio Code.
Why would you want C# in there somehow?
I know, right?
No, you don't want to. I've tried to use Visual Studio Code for writing, and there are plugins for that.
There's Markdown plugins, too. Yeah. I mean, you can use it for Markdown.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
You could do it, but it's a silly thing.
It's not. I'd rather use the ThoughtPad over Visual Studio.
Thank you. Finally. There is the full quote I needed, and now
I'd rather use the ThoughtPad.
That's all you had to say.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Finally.
Finally.
All right. I want to take a break. We're going to move on, though, right? You've said everything you want to say. I don't want to rush you.
That's all we can say on 10X.
Yeah. Well, actually, sorry.
One more
We should
thing.
Just mention real quick. So BetFest, as we're going to call it, also happened this week. Microsoft announced didn't announce themselves, but on the behalf of their partners, hey, there's a bunch of new education PCs coming out from everybody. There's a set of maybe 5 companies that are actually going to have LTE-equipped education laptops.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is kind of, that's interesting. Microsoft has a Classroom Pen, remember, that is a little bit like, you know, Surface Pen for touch or pen-capable machines. They have a new version of that, which is really cheap. I think it's like $20. And so that should get that technology into more schools. That's kind of cool. And I think that might be...
There was a Teams thing, but...
Oh, Teams. Yeah, I'm sorry. There was a Teams thing.
Yeah. There's a feature that I didn't know about, but it's called Reflect. It's an emotional well-being polling type application. So you can say to your students, how's everyone feeling about the day?
How do you feel?
Yeah, exactly. So they're integrating that into education insights with Teams. I know. It has nothing to do with us, but
it's just another privacy violation. Why does Microsoft need to know how I'm feeling?
Your feelings will be uploaded to the Microsoft cloud.
I was feeling fine until you asked me about my feelings. Thanks.
Exactly.
Very funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I think that's most of that.
So that's that.
Let me, you know, this would be a good time to introduce a new sponsor to the show, and then we can move on. We've got more to talk about, including the world famous people come for from all over the world, Xbox News. But first, Word from a brand new sponsor.
Conga. Conga. Like a conga line. C-O, like a conga drum. C-O-N-G-A. Are you ready to evolve your operations, streamline your workflows, create and deliver digital documents, quotes, and contracts more effectively? Well, you need to know about Conga. Conga helps businesses digitally transform their commercial operations. Other companies may be stepping away from opportunities like this, but Conga believes this is the perfect time to keep moving forward. Those manual processes that were once conducted in person and in office, not so much anymore, right? An abrupt halt, as a matter of fact, when the pandemic hit. So businesses found themselves, you know, as we have, limiting contact, working from home. Eventually, we're going to go back, of course, but the need for digital transformation suddenly really had a real concrete need. You know, it catapulted from a, you know, oh, yeah, someday, to, no, we need it now. It's non-negotiable. Conga offer, and this is good news, because you know what? After the pandemic, this transformation is going to make a huge difference forever. Conga offers the most robust solution for digital document process and commercial excellence transformation. Their end-to-end digital document transformation suite can help you automate and optimize your daily documents and contracts to save time, close business faster, empower your teams to work with more purpose. With Conga Composer, I just like saying that, Conga Composer, you can power up customer engagement. With Composer digital document generation from Salesforce, for instance, is what we do, is quick and error-free every time. Create beautiful templated documents right from your Salesforce. Automate those templated documents so they always get built with the right data. That saves a lot of time. Manual entry is notoriously inaccurate. Every time, your documents will be perfect, pulling the data from your CRM or any system of record with no errors. And then deliver documents in a variety of formats by almost any method. Store them where you want. It's very flexible. Advanced features for Composer Enterprise. Get real-time document notifications that reveal recipient engagement. More than just a, yeah, they got it. It's going to tell you they got it, they read it, they spent some time with it, and it makes follow-up a lot easier. With Conga Batch, you can consolidate, schedule, and deliver the documents you create with Composer. Choose how you want to launch and send, whether automatically or on demand, and even do so for multiple documents at once. Conga Composer's add-on, Conga Trigger, well, I love these names, will let you create and distribute digital documents automatically directly from Composer and Salesforce without having to click a button every time. So I'll give you some examples. T-Mobile for Business, save time and money. They use Conga. T-Mobile sales reps didn't have the necessary key capability in their sales proposals. Their customers couldn't see the proposals in writing, or they had to create additional documents, time-consuming and, of course, error-prone. With Conga Composer, T-Mobile sales promotions have never been clearer, easier, or more beautiful, and I'll add, more accurate. What once took 24 to 48 hours to file a case and request a ticket, now it's instantaneous. Sales teams now avoid multiple systems. T-Mobile has seen a 25% increase in user adoption, and you will like this, they get paid faster. Conga is committed to improving how people do business at a much larger scale with additional resources. They know we're all in this together, so experience Conga's new brand and have some fun at Conga, conga.com/twit. Test your knowledge of trivia. Share it on social. Have some fun. Conga will take the results and donate to a charity that's supporting COVID relief efforts. So you're doing it for a good cause, too. Have some fun. Go to conga.com/twit. We thank Conga so much for their support of Windows Weekly. We thank you, Windows Weekly, dear Windows Weekly listeners, for supporting us by going to conga.com/twit. And welcome, Conga, to the Windows Weekly fam. All right. Some departures. Julia White is leaving Microsoft.
Yeah.
Wow.
This was kind of a head scratcher because it came the very same week or the week after Brad Anderson announced he was leaving. So Brad Anderson, if you remember, is going to Qualtrics, which was a subsidiary of SAP. Well, Julia White, the head of Azure Marketing and another Microsoft veteran, I think she's been there close to 20 years, also is going to SAP She is going to become, what's her new title? Let me see. She's got a good title. Head Chief Marketing and Solutions Officer for SAP. Huh.
That's a good job.
It is. So Julia White, a lot of people may not know her name, but you've seen her demo for sure, because she used to be the key demo person at all the big Microsoft IT events. You definitely saw her demoing at Ignite and maybe at Build.
This picture you have on your article, is she in a truck? What is going on there? I don't...
Yeah, I think that was some staged...
That was,
you know,
the Microsoft
glam shot. Yeah, exactly.
Here she is driving a truck, the Azure Mobile.
But she had been everywhere. She had been in Windows Server Division, then she went to the Office Division, and then Azure head of marketing for like 5 years.
Was she part of that original iOS app announcement? Remember when Microsoft announced they were bringing Office to iOS? Hmm.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't remember.
If she wasn't, she was in subsequent events, because she used to, she was part of Office 365 at that time.
Nice.
Yep. So just like Brad Anderson being replaced.
It's
amazing.
It's amazing.
I know. So we all feel like we kind of know her. And of course, all the people who watch Microsoft are like, okay, what's going on? Everyone's leaving for SAP. What's happening? Is it a reorg? Is it like some horrible thing happening in Azure? So I'm not hearing that at all. I'm hearing just indirectly, maybe she had topped out in terms of where she could go at Microsoft in marketing. You know, because, I mean, what's the next job? Chris Kapp, you're out of here. Julia White wants your job. Right,
sure. She's a little hipper than you are, buddy.
Yeah, just a little.
That's a good gig. I mean, SAP is a good company. That's a good gig, I think.
It's a good gig. I've heard it's a tough company to work for.
Oh,
but,
really?
I'm a little freaked by people like this leaving. I feel like every little, not that I have a personal connection with Julia White, but other than the fact that, by the way, I don't know, I live in Pennsylvania, I don't know anybody here. I go to the gym, and I always see these people that look like people I know. And there's a woman who goes to the gym, looks exactly like her. And I think of her as Pennsylvania Julia White. I also have Pennsylvania
Eddie
Murray.
Just don't go up and squeeze her shoulders like you did the MJ.
Yeah.
I try not to touch, especially these days.
Fist bump.
Yeah, but she's really buff, though, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Julia White. Wasn't
Pennsylvania
Julia White.
Like, White. We don't know about Microsoft.
No, regular Julia White is like a semi... No, she's like a semi-professional swimmer. Like, she's very buff.
She actually looks pretty. Yeah, she looks pretty serious.
She is.
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah. So she's being replaced at Microsoft by somebody I think I've met, but I don't know that well. Somebody whose nickname is JG, and his name is John Chirapurath.
Now you know why they call him JG.
Yeah.
It's not JLG. Yeah.
No, not JLG.
Sorry.
Julie Larson Green, no. The JG is the interim marketing lead while they do a search internally and externally for the new Julia White. So, yeah. I know.
There's no next Julia
They should call Pennsylvania Julia White. I hear she's
Thank you. Yeah. They don't have to call her. I get to ask her myself. I see her every day.
Yeah. No, she's another one. Julia, I'm kind of sad. I'm kind of sad to see Julia White go too, because I felt, even though we don't know these people, you get this feeling you're connected to them, you see them all the time at these events.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Right. Anyway, she's out of there.
Who's next, Mary Jo? Because as we know, these things always happen in threes.
I know. Who would be next? We'll have to put our thinking caps on that. I don't know. Who would be next?
Who's the next traitor?
Who?
This is completely normal in corporate America.
It is. You know, people have ambitions, and even during a pandemic, they want to climb the corporate ladder.
Why do they have ambitions?
Sometimes you just want to change.
I know. Sometimes you just want to change. Yep.
You know how I feel about change, guys.
Exactly.
I don't want anything to change.
Yeah.
I don't understand change. Why do you want this?
Do you think so? SAP's German, but where are they where are they located in the U.S.?
Yeah, I was wondering.
So I think is going to stay in Redmond and do a lot of travel in terms of going like to the Valley and probably to New York. So I think she's staying.
I mean, it's going to be remote for a while, I guess.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter, does it?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. True.
Okay.
Yeah.
What else is new? Oh, Microsoft is going to do self-driving cars too. See, every time Apple...
Here we go.
Every time Apple says... Microsoft says, well, we can do that. They're not?
Here it comes.
No.
Okay, tell me what they're going to do.
No. So... You know, so this is, I saw so many headlines saying Microsoft getting into self-driving cars. Nope, they are not getting into a self-driving car or getting into that field. They're investing in they're investing in Cruise. Cruise is a subsidiary, a self-driving subsidiary of General Motors. So they made some undisclosed amount of an investment in Cruise, and they also, like they do with so many of their contracts, said now Cruise and GM both are making Azure their, quote, preferred cloud vendor, which means not exclusive, but, you know, an important one. And GM is also going to commit to doing a lot of other things with Microsoft AI, machine learning, Office 365, Microsoft 365. So I won't say it's a tit for tat. I won't say Microsoft invested in Cruise and got them to commit to all the stuff, but maybe it is a tit for tat.
So Cruise is actually one of the biggest of all of these guys.
Are they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Huh. Five. They're huge.
Do we know what they've invested here? What's the...
We don't know. So the Cruise got a $2 billion investment, and it was made by Microsoft, GM, Honda, and institutional investors combined. But we don't know what dollar amount each of those provided.
I mean, honestly,
but yeah,
between that many companies of that size, that's...
Yeah.
Not as big as it could be, I guess. But
no, okay. Right. Yeah.
Cruise is as big as Waymo, I would say, and as active.
Oh, really?
Are they? Oh, yeah. You hear a lot of them. Maybe because they're in the, they have a lot of their test driving stuff here in the Bay Area, maybe. I see Cruise cars in San Francisco.
If you can get a car to drive in San Francisco, you
that's
can get
pretty
a car
good.
To drive anywhere.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. So you know who didn't get the deal of a preferred cloud vendor? AWS. And that's not surprising, right? Because AWS is working on their own technology around autonomous vehicles. So if you're a company who's going to compete with them in some way, you don't want to pick them as your preferred cloud vendor, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just a good investment for Microsoft to pick one of these and be part of it. Because it could be huge. It could be the next big thing.
And they, right, they also get learnings back to them, right? Because they, anytime GM does stuff with AI and ML, Microsoft's going to get some vertical transfer of technology back to them about autonomous vehicles. So it helps them build up their expertise in it, even if they don't make a self-driving car like Apple.
So I'm just going to ask the question. Are we just going to let it pass that Mary Jo just said learnings and nobody said
I
anything?
Knew you were going to say that. As soon as it came out of my mouth, I'm like, yes, I just said the word learnings. You know what I said the other day, too? I said, can I have an ask?
Oh, don't.
And no, after I said it, I immediately washed my mouth out with soap.
I was going like, to say.
Right away. God.
Somebody just walked on my grave.
I know. I was like, oh, did I really just say that? We hang out with them too much.
That's right. It seeps into your vocab.
I'm going to send you a schedule plus so we can talk about your problems.
Exactly. Right. Yep.
Oh, boy.
Ugh, an ask. Oh, sorry, God. Guys. Sorry. After I said it, I was like, did I just say that? I did. Yeah. But I think it's interesting. And I saw a lot of people also saying this is Microsoft's first investment in self-driving technology. And that is incorrect. They did a deal that a lot of people forgot about in 2017 with Baidu around self-driving cars. So, yeah,
they've
invested in this before. Yeah. Huh. But it's been a while.
Okay.
Amazon out of this particular market. It seems like if anyone needs to figure out self-driving vehicles, it's Amazon, you know.
Well, they're going to figure it out, right?
They'll figure it out for their for logistics purposes, for their vans and stuff. Right. You know, that's where they're pushing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think both Cruise and Waymo are looking at, like, cabs, like... you know, passenger vehicles, but not, well, both of them, I'm sure, have delivery because that's going to be the first thing that happens is commercial vehicles.
Right.
But, you know, it's very few of them are looking at one in your garage. That's not where they're going with this.
Right.
No.
At least not initially. Only Tesla is the only one talking about that.
Mr. Gelsinger does have a little Apple envy. New CEO at Intel.
First day on the job. I like it.
Actually, when does he start? He starts February, I thought.
Yeah, but his first appearance before employees.
Oh, yeah. He addressed in all hands. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. He made a reference to Apple. He referred to them as that lifestyle company in Cupertino.
Oh, ow.
But hold on a second. So I think that's a very accurate way to describe that company,
no, it
right?
is, for sure. That's what they sell. They sell a lifestyle as much as
technology. They really do, right? Yeah. And that's why, you know, like things like the Apple Watch, like the reason they sell in such numbers is not because people are looking for a really expensive fitness band. It's because it's an Apple product. You know, it's beautiful. Yeah. And maybe that it does those things is neat, you know. But but here's the thing. I find this to be very credible of him to say. Some people don't like this. They thought it was negative. But, you know, there are companies like Intel and AMD and Qualcomm. And others probably, but those are the big three that make microprocessors and other chipsets. And that's all they do, pretty much. Mm. And they're getting beat by a lifestyle company from Cupertino. I mean, there is a, you know, it's like, could we do the one thing that we do well is I think, the right message, you know. I think the Intel obviously has some big problems. And so this is maybe his, what was it, Stephen Neal called? The burning platform. A memo that he wrote, but
manifesto, you know, kind of thing.
When he took over Nokia, he was like, look, you know, we need to set our sights on something in particular. And I think this was a good positioning for him. So it gives me hope that he will do the right thing. The other thing, by the way, this guy's going to have to do is decide sometime very soon whether Intel is going to farm out some of its manufacturing to a third party. And by a third party, I guess I mean TSMC, right? To get down below 10 nanometer.
That's the big for their chipsets. That's the big one. I think they just announced that they're going to do the i3 TSMC's 5 nanometer.
Well,
process.
You know, it's funny. I didn't do this on purpose, but I just mentioned Nokia. I mean, there is one gigantic similarity between these companies, which is that they are or were old school in that they did all their manufacturing by themselves. Like, one of the problems for Nokia by the time Microsoft came around and had to buy them was that they were so top heavy because of all the salaries and insurance and all the stuff that they had on all the people working in all the factories. And then all the real estate they owned and all the, you know, they had all these physical capabilities. And by that point, the world had moved on to what Apple does and what everyone does now, which is they farm this stuff out to other companies. And it's a much more efficient and less expensive way of doing things. And, you know, Intel used to be kind of the envy of the world because they did it all, you know. And I think now what we're seeing is maybe doing it all is not a benefit anymore. It certainly isn't for Intel. They haven't been able to. They can't even really do 10 nanometer reliably, is what I understand.
No, that's right. Yeah. They've been really stalled. On the other hand, we are in a massive chip shortage worldwide. I mean, Xbox, and, you know, video card, GPUs, automobiles. So many products are just on hold because they can't get the chips anymore.
We got to get the, the MOS. You know, what was it, 6580 something that was in the Commodore 64 going again? Can we make those things in volume? Is that like a, you know, chips that actually had like feet that you set into a...
You might think that would be an opportunity for Intel because they have all these fabs, but maybe they have the same problems. And of course, they can't produce the...
Well, it's like, but they have fabs, but it's like you're, GM and they have fabs, you know, they have factories that build, you know, Buicks.
Right, right.
But the world has moved on.
That's a good point. No, that's exactly right. They got the fabs, they're building the wrong product.
Yeah.
No,
you're what they have is really expensive real estate that's out of date and doesn't do anything useful. Yeah. And, you know, again, it's exactly the problem that Nokia had.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I know you've been waiting for it.
World famous Xbox segment.
For the world famous Xbox segment, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Paul Theroux.
Wow.
Pressure's
every
on, Paul.
At the beginning of every month. And then again, in the middle of every month, Microsoft talks about the new games that are coming to Xbox Game Pass. So we are in the second half of the month. And so earlier this week, they announced the games that are coming starting tomorrow. And then again on the 26th and the 28th. There's several of them. A lot of Yakuza games, which I'm not even familiar with.
Yakuza 3, 4, and 5. Ooh.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
I am not familiar with almost any of these. Donut City was an Eddie Van Halen song from 1985. I don't know what's going on. So I don't know.
These look
Control.
Do you remember?
Pretty good.
You're old enough to remember going to a video game store. And I don't mean like GameStop, like the modern video game store. I remember in the early days of the Atari, where it was like a comic book shop. It was kind of fly-specked and dusty, and there was stuff stacked, and you'd go, and there would be in the back, it was exactly like this, all these titles that you never heard of.
Right.
That you had no idea if they were any good.
Well, I was an Amiga guy a little later.
Same
in
thing,
life,
right?
And
yeah.
It was the same thing, because it was all these games from Europe that no one had ever heard of.
Exactly. They were like the imports. It was like the imports section of
your
record store.
This game is an ant that is running around in a world made of candy.
But the problem is they're still, relatively expensive. I don't remember how much the Atari games were, but it was enough for me to go, I'm not plunking down whatever, $30 on some ant in the Candyland game. I don't know if it's good or not. This was a real problem.
By the way, that was a pretty good game.
Ant in Candyland? Okay, good.
I can't think of it. That was not the name of it. But yeah, he was like a ninja ant, too. He had like a little ninja thing going on. I know. Well, the Amiga. So it was a long time ago.
Well, go ahead.
Anyway.
Yes, there they are.
There you go.
Your games for January.
So, in more positive news, Microsoft did something I am almost positive is unprecedented, which is they announced, I think for the first time ever, here is a list of all of the games, well, not all that we know of now that we're announcing now, that are coming out this year that will be Xbox exclusives. And by the way, specifically, they say console exclusives. Like what? I mean, if you were to complain about anything with regards to the Xbox as a fan of video games, it would have been their lack of exclusives. And it's a long list. It's a really long list. It's a good list, I think. I took out all the screenshots, so who knows? I mean, obviously Halo Infinite, everyone's heard about. The Medium, Microsoft Flight Simulator, obviously, is already out on PC. But Psychonauts 2, I mean, there's a lot of – it's a pretty good list.
Nice.
So I'm like, okay, interesting. And don't forget the Yakuza Remastered Collection.
3, 4, and 5.
Yeah. So those 3, 4, and 5 games that are, and 6. Wait, hold on. It looks like.
You've always won.
Yeah. So actually, as of that release, all Yakuza games, 0 through 6.
Wow.
So I guess they're.
They must be good. They wouldn't make 6 of them if they weren't.
They must be. I don't even know what they are, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. And then the other, I don't know if this is big news or not. Maybe this, I'll just call this, it's big news, but it's not unexpected when you hear what it is. In the same sense that mobile platforms and Windows does this as well, are trying to figure out a way to get the platform updated without requiring a full system update, right? Google does this through the Play Store. They put certain Android components into the Play Store. It makes it easier to update things rather than having to do a full, OS update, which takes a while. Microsoft is bringing something like this to the Xbox. Xbox Series X and S specifically. They have a really screwy system for testing this stuff through the Insider program. Remember, they have like many more levels, and it's all completely different from what we see in Windows and Office. But if you are, I swear to God, this is what they call this, Windows Insiders in the Omega level, right? And only a subset of them did get a new build this past week that for the first time implements this new process for updating system experiences without doing a full system build, right? And thus making it more agile. So I'm sure by the time, I would guess this will be available for everyone by the end of the year, maybe in a big update in the fall. Ironically, but then Microsoft will be able to update the system more efficiently. That's good. Although, for whatever it's worth, anyone who has an Xbox One or a Series X or S knows that if they leave it in a certain power management state, you're going to get these updates overnight. So you don't typically see updates. I don't, certainly. The instant on setting, that is, I should say. But if you ever did see a system update on Xbox One, you know it can take a while. Not Windows 10 or Mac OS long time, but it... there's nothing worse than sitting down in front of a console and turning it on. You're like, oh, you need an update. And like, you literally can't play a game until you install the update. So hopefully this eliminates that kind of problem.
From the chat room, this mm-hmm. just in, Didgeridoo says, the ant in a Candyland game was called Zool.
That's right.
Yep.
That is the name.
You remember that? Zool. Yep. And
Chupa Chups. That was there's all these weird British candies in it. That was the thing. I just remembered it when he said
Chupa Chups.
That was the little pops or what do you call them?
Yeah. Add a sink in our chat room says, Yakuza is a pretty popular franchise. Well, obviously, there's a bunch of them. Control is a big game from last year, and Medium is brand new. So
there you go.
Our ignorance. Yeah,
sorry. There are some good things in there. Yeah.
If you don't play Call of Duty, you ain't nothing.
What if you don't play the new Call of Duty? Oh. Are you less than them?
No, you shouldn't. You did good. All right. That concludes the world famous Xbox segment.
World famous.
I feel like it was maybe hyped a little more than it should have been.
Now we continue on with the back of the book and your tip of the week. Finally, actually, there should be a drum roll for this.
Thank you.
Paul is going to announce the next
after years of indecision
book.
So, the tip here, so to speak, is I guess I'm asking you for your support in the future. But back when we created the Windows 10 field guide over 5 years ago, it was funny to go back and read this. The original plan was that we were going to support the book through at least Windows 10 version 1809, which, you know, of course we did. And then we kept supporting it through 20H2. I still have a few small updates for that. But, you know, the one thing I've been really struggling with is like how to end support and what does that look like and what's the next, like, how do you do this, you know? And so I've been talking to Raphael about that. I've been talking to Mary Jo about it, but she doesn't seem interested for some reason in the book thing. I don't know what's going on there.
No, I'm not. Okay. You know, I have so many learnings about writing books.
The futility of writing books.
I really don't want to write another book.
Plus, with that kind of word use, I mean, who would want to contributing anyway?
Exactly.
Anyway. I think what we've come... No, I don't think. I know that what we've come to is that rather than do this thing where you're on kind of a perpetual support cycle, we're going to do a different edition or version of whatever you want to call it of the book for every version of Windows 10. We'll probably lower the price. That's not sure yet. But because, you know, obviously I don't see people buying every version. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you think about how like a Rick Steves travel book would go, you know, every year there's a book about Paris and every year there's a book about London. And he doesn't rewrite the whole thing from scratch. He makes sure it's updated for what's going on, you know, whatever it is, prices, things, you know, recommendations, whatever. And so I think that's going to be that is going to be the plan. I really dithered over this, but that's how we're going to do that going forward. So
I'm sorry, I'm confused. Is this the field guide to Paris you're going to be doing? Did I miss something?
Well, so you can think of it as right now we have the field guide to Windows 10,
yes.
Right? Which you can think of as the field guide to Windows 10 version 20H2.
Yes.
And so there'll be one for whatever the next version of Windows is and then so on and so forth. I also talked to Raphael very briefly, but we were looking at Windows 10X and whether it made sense to do a book for that. Mm. And that would obviously have to be considerably less expensive. But not yet, although... I will say, for whatever it's worth, you know, it actually wouldn't be hard to pull over stuff from the other book and convert it for that as well. And so that's something we're kind of looking at. And if Windows 10X makes sense, we'll probably do a version for that as well. Anyway.
Cool.
Thank you for anyone who has bought the book. And, you know.
Maybe, good luck. Good luck to you.
Yeah, good luck with that. Well, when you think about it, I mean, the existing book will be good for a long time to come. I mean, honestly.
Now, this makes sense. I think...
Also, and maybe Mary Jo could remember this. I had come up with this thing a couple of weeks ago. I thought this was part of a tip. I went back and looked. I couldn't find it. But I was talking about how we all have more time than we think we do, and we can, you know, you can learn in different ways, right? You can use like a Duolingo mm-hmm. after a language. Remember this? You were kind of like, how do you have time to do blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I've really come to over the past couple of weeks is I actually think I have been spreading myself too thin. Like I have been trying to juggle too many things, you know? Mm-hmm. And one of the problems with the book and getting it updated was that I've also been doing these programming things. And I think mm-hmm. with this new schedule, what I can do is write the book on a more traditional schedule, publish a book, and then I can focus on that programming stuff for some number of months until it's time to work on the book again and not like worry. But I think the problem is I've been splitting my time between these two things. And I guess yeah. what I'm trying to say in a really roundabout way is that you were probably right about something, but I'm not even sure what it was.
No, I feel like you have so many things going on. Plus, you're managing photos and stuff at the same time. I'm like, you know.
Yes, you're right. It's a constant struggle to manage.
You got a lot of things going on with all your OCD tendencies. I will say,
but you know, with the pandemic and everything, and just the general stress about the way the world's going, and my kids are in college and they're not around, and it's there's all this stuff, you know, swirling around. I find myself finding things that I typically do all the time to be very difficult. Like I feel like I've spread myself, like even something like Duolingo, I'm trying to do these catch up exercises. And if you get like three wrong, you kind of fail out, and it's something I should know. And most of the times it's just a typo. I actually do know the answer, but I find myself getting really frustrated with it. And it's kind of the opposite of the point of doing this thing, which is to kind of better yourself in some way, not to make yourself an insane person, you know? And so I've been kind of looking at stuff and trying to figure out a schedule that makes more sense than what I've been doing. And part of it is this book slash developer thing. So
that's good.
Mm-hmm. You might have had a point.
Maybe.
It's hard to say. from an app perspective, actually, there was a bunch of news already this week about web browsers. There's also an Opera thing that happened where Opera is getting into gaming, which I didn't have in the notes, but I'll just throw that out there. And Opera bought a small gaming company, and they have a gaming-oriented web browser, which I didn't even know existed. But I guess they're starting a game studio, and that's going to be a thing there as well. But Chrome 88 came out, or is coming out right now. It's rolling out now. It's a big release. I don't recommend that people use Chrome. I mean, I'm going to stick with that. But if you are using Chrome, obviously you're going to get the update. You're going to want this. It has much better password management and password protections built in. One of the things I do like in Chrome that's pretty cool is you can go into the password section of settings. It will examine your passwords, and it will tell you if any had been involved in a like an exploit of some kind. And they'll tell you, hey, this thing was involved in whatever. You're going to want to go change this. Now what they're going to do is look at the passwords and say, hey, it's cute that you're using the name of your pet for this password, but maybe you should use something a little stronger than that. And so I think that's a really neat feature. Although, you know, you shouldn't use it. So, but whatever, that's just my opinion. And then Brave, which is a Chromium-based web browser and very much focused on security and privacy and performance, has announced that the latest version of their product supports IPFS, which humorously stands for Interplanetary File System, which is a peer-to-peer hypermedia protocol, which they say makes the web faster, safer, and more open. But basically, it's a peer-to-peer system for delivering content. They're the first web browser to use this. And if this were to take off, the idea here is we have URLs today, URIs that point to a specific resource, and it's kind of like a one point of failure system. Whereas if this stuff is on a P2P network, you get it doesn't point to a specific thing, but rather you just download the content. It might come from a different place. You don't have to really think about that. So it's supposed to be better for the internet overall. It sounds like a pretty good idea. But it's in, you know, obviously it's going to have to be more than Brave for this to make any sense at all. But anyway, they are taking that leap. If you are a Brave user, you should update that, and you will get that capability in the new version of the browser.
That's really interesting. I don't know.
I like the name.
What is it going to mean?
Planetary file system.
Yeah.
All right.
He didn't mention the new feature in Credge that I'm keeping a close eye on.
What's that?
Which feature is that?
Vertical tabs has rolled out finally to the dev channel.
Everybody's excited about that. Channel. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a dev channel. So that means it's on its way to stable finally. When did they announce this? Like a year ago or more?
Sometime last year. Yeah.
I can't wait for vertical tabs. I'm not running the dev version of Credge.
That's interesting.
But yeah. I want to try it out. I think I would like it because I always have so many tabs open.
I don't know if this is stable or dev, but there's a Chrome feature that's making its way to Edge where it will put tabs to sleep that you're not accessing.
Yeah. Yep.
I hate this feature. I hate it.
You do?
And the problem is, well, it because it screws up two important things. So, for example, in my RSS reader tab, I need to know when there's new stuff, so I can look at it. And it goes to sleep, and you know, you're like, I haven't heard from this thing in a while. You go click on it. It's like, oh, it's 52 new stories. Like, great. Thanks.
Yeah.
But also notifications can go to sleep as well. So like email, you know, whatever. So I hopefully there's some way to turn it off, but that's something I'll be looking at soon. I don't, it's not good.
Yeah.
Now, Mary Jo Foley.
Yes.
Enterprise pick of the week.
And your anti-Xbox agenda. Go ahead.
Yes, exactly. So my Enterprise pick has to do with the part two of Microsoft Ignite, which we knew was going to happen sometime this spring. But if you go to myignite.microsoft.com now, the dates are there. So we know now Ignite Part 2, March 2nd to 4th, coming soon. We don't know yet what's on the agenda. That's not up. The session catalog's not updated yet. But, you know, Ignite is their IT pro show. This past year, they decided to divide it into two instead of doing what like AWS and Google did, which was like extend their IT pro shows for like weeks on end and have them be like, I don't know, what was AWS's reInvent? It was like 10 weeks of content or something back to back to back. So Microsoft just decided to do Ignite Part 1, Ignite Part 2. And so in March, we will see the second part. I'm trying to think of what might debut at that, given that time frame. And I don't know. Build will be sometime fairly soon after that, like April or May. Yeah. And that also will be a virtual event. So typically, it's not a lot of developer content, but I wouldn't be surprised to see some fluid framework stuff possibly at Ignite, since that has a lot to do with what Microsoft's doing around apps and how they're thinking about their Office apps going forward. So that might be a good time for that kind of content. There's always Azure content, you know, new Azure services that we haven't heard about before. I don't know if it'll be where they debut Azure Stack Fiji, which is their AWS Outpost competitor, but that could be something around that time frame where they talk about that. Anyway, put it on your calendar now, March 2nd to 4th.
Nice.
IT pros.
Good. Yep. Good. The new year is coming. Yep. By the way,
next Tuesday. Tuesday also. This is a weird day for this, but next Tuesday is Microsoft Q2 FY21 earnings, which is great for Windows Weekly.
Because yeah, they usually do it next day. On Wednesday, right after our show.
Yeah.
Which is not
I know,
good.
Which is always terrible for us.
Do you think
I don't know. I don't know. Great quarter, guys.
Everyone begins with that. Yeah.
I know. I know. It's just always like, let me ask a question instead of letting all these analysts ask questions.
I just wanted to compliment you on your tie, Mr. Nadella. That was an inspired choice.
I just want to say again how much I love your commercial cloud numbers. They're excellent.
Right. If I could have a little shout out for Chris Capicella, I just wanted to say.
Anyway, so next Windows Weekly, we'll have a lot to say about the earnings, I'm sure.
Cool.
Because it's on Tuesday.
Cool.
Yep.
Codename of the week.
Yeah, so this is a codename people have heard before, but I thought since we talked so much about 10X, it might be a nice time to revisit it. And it's actually more of an acronym than a codename, although we use it as a codename. VAIL. V-A-I-L. So VAIL, well, a lot of us use that synonymously with the Windows the Win32 container technology that's going to be in 10X. Technically, VAIL is shorthand for Virtualized Application Interface Layer. And I believe VAIL is just the code name for the for container technology itself, and that UWP, MSIX, and Win32 containers all have something to do with VAIL. I may be wrong on that, but I kind of recall that from a Walking Cat presentation that he found on the web. So yeah, VAIL is something that's very key to what we were talking about today, because we believe although Microsoft, again, has not said this officially, that when 10X first comes out this spring, it will not have the Win32 container tech. Yeah, and Paul said Vail was also Media Center code name. Yes, it was.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't like acronym overloading.
No.
I have a huge problem.
I know.
It's a big problem.
I know.
Yep.
Well, Vail, you always hear about Vail and Rail together, and they're both related to container technology.
Interesting. Yeah.
So,
I need a
Rail
beer.
Remote application interface?
Yeah, what is the R in Rail?
Yeah, I think it was remote access something, okay. Something. Okay. Yeah.
I like the name of this beer.
I know. I was trying to think of a good beer to go with Inauguration Day, yes. Since that happened earlier today. So Treehouse Brewing, which is one of these really famous cult breweries that it's hard to get their beer, but lately, because all these breweries are shipping their beer, it's a little easier. Treehouse makes a beer that they usually make for New Year's called Decade Do-Over. New Decade Do-Over. But I thought that seemed really appropriate today also. It's time for a new decade do-over, right?
Technically, the decade began on this year, not 2020.
Right,
so
that's true.
It's
that's
accurate.
A good point.
Yeah.
So this is a New Decade Do-Over is a double IPA that has all the tastes that people love when they get double IPAs, like orange, melon, mango, all the nice fruit. It's bitter, yet sweet.
Ooh.
Just kind of like you know, the new presidency might be. Yeah. So I've seen a few people checking this in on Untappd today, because who wasn't day drinking today during the inauguration? A lot of people.
Lisa wanted to put a bottle of champagne up last night. And I said, "See? No, I have to go to work after this. I can't."
Exactly.
I can't be toasting the new president and then, hey,
at 9 a.m.
Hey, Ray, Joe.
Yeah.
I don't know. That might be a different kind of show.
Could.
It'd be different.
It might be.
I have yet to do Winna's
Weekly
Drunk. We've
done drinking shows.
Yeah, I've done other shows drunk, but not this one.
No, wait. What about the whiskey show?
You're right.
An exception.
You're right. So it's now the case that I've done every show drunk.
It all comes back to Richard Campbell.
It's all Richard Campbell's
fault. It does, doesn't it? Oh, I blame Richard for so many things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you ever get to try a beer from Treehouse, they're based in Charlton, Mass.
You've talked about a number of them, and it makes me want.
I'm sorry, Charlton.
Yeah, Charlton, which may be near. It may be near Sturbridge, somewhere out.
Oh,
that
I
way.
Used to go to Sturbridge all the time as a kid.
There's so many towns in Massachusetts.
Like they made a name like that's in a Stephen King book, or something.
They probably pronounce it Carlton. You know,
probably or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, if you ever see any Treehouse beers, grab them because they're always really fantastic.
Our local grocery has a pretty good beer selection, as you might imagine. A lot of people around here,
they do
beer drinkers.
They do. Yeah. I've been there.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. That's Windows Weekly. How about that? Next week we'll have the update on Microsoft's quarterly earnings. That should be a great quarter.
We'll be fast. One thing we can be sure of is they did okay.
Yeah. Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley are here every. Let's see, Wednesday, almost said Tuesday, Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. We do Windows Weekly live and on tape. So you can watch us do it live at twit.tv/live as we do it. There's audio and video there. You'll find Paul at his website, therot.com, Mary Jo at allaboutmicrosoft.com, and Paul's books.
Soon-to-be books.
I presume the second one will appear at leanpub.com as well. Okay, good. Yeah. Leanpub.com.
Nice.
We made a cover that has Mary Jo's name on it, just in case. She changed her name.
Just send it to her to give her a heart attack.
I could do your intro. I could do your intro and call it Learnings from Mary Jo.
Learnings from Mary Jo.
Mary Jo.
It's like the Jack Handy thing from SNL.
Yeah.
Learnings from Mary Jo.
Learnings from Mary Jo. We do the show live, but then you can get on-demand versions of it, of course, at our website, twit.tv/dubdub.
There's a YouTube channel, and the show will go up soon, you know, a couple of hours. Give us some time to edit it on that and on the website. You know, the nice thing, if you're, they got to do, you know, they polish it.
Editing video sounds like it would take a really long time.
Well, in our case, it's not so much editing as packaging.
Yeah.
You know, sure. But they go through it, and there's a bunch of little administrative things we have to do. Mm-hmm. You can subscribe in a podcast client. Then you don't have to think about it at all. It'll just appear magically. Mm-hmm. Just subscribe and to Windows Weekly, and then you'll get it the minute it's available, and you'll have it, which is nice. So you can listen to it at your leisure. We have a number of ways to interact with me and the hosts and the Twit family. Of course, if you're watching live, the chat room's a great place to be. It's there all the time, 24/7. That's irc.twit.tv. Our community forums are at twit.community. www.twit.community, open to all. And we also now have a federated Mastodon instance. It's about a year old, actually, twit.social. So it's a Twitter clone, but it's federated, and I love it. We're having a lot of fun there.
Mastodon,
yes. The idea is it's federated. So Twitter is owned by Twitter, and you go to Twitter, and Twitter is it. But this is, it looks just like Twitter. But anybody can run a server, as we do, and many others do. Mm-hmm. And you can follow the people on your server locally, but you can also follow people on other servers. So you can follow me at Leo at twit.social, or, I don't know, John C. Dvorak at John C. Dvorak at noagendasocial.com, each, because we run our own servers, and there are thousands of them out there. And so that's kind of neat. You get both the benefits of a nice local community, but the ability to follow anybody that's there, and there's no one single, you know, central source. So,
right.
Yeah, it's. I think it's really the better way to do social, but that's just my opinion. That's why we do it, twit.social, if you want to join. I do manually approve everybody to keep spammers and trolls out, so if you apply, give me a little time, maybe a day.
Well, what kind of a Twitter clone is that?
I know. Well, you know,
I feel like you don't understand what Twitter's for. Like.
For instance, there's a Gab Mastodon instance, but as mm-hmm. you know, as administrator of ours, I don't. You can't follow anybody. You can't read anything from it because I don't allow it. So you also have that kind of control, so we can keep the Nazis out. You know, just a little minor thing, but I like it.
Yeah, no, it seems like a fairly major thing.
Yeah, no, I have high hopes.
Yeah,
I think now is the time. A lot of people are turning away from, you know, WhatsApp mm-hmm. and Facebook and mm-hmm. Twitter and looking for alternatives. And I think this is a good alternative. I'm very happy with it. Anyway, that's it for the show. I hope you'll come back next Wednesday. I'm talking to you, Paul and Mary Jo.
Maybe.
Please. Come back next Wednesday. Come back, all of you, next Wednesday. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.
Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in to another show here on the Twit Network. If you are a fan of home automation, Internet of Things, and all things smart technology, you should check out my podcast, Smart Tech Today. I do it with Matthew Cassinelli, and we have so much fun talking about all the latest news for all things smart tech.